Good morning. Welcome. It's a delight to welcome you all here this morning. I'm Ram Murthy, and this is Naya Swami B. Raj, your minister this morning. This story is, as Swami pointed out, very famous. It's one of the best ones known from the Bible, and everybody, whether they've looked at it very closely or not, no doubt has their own take on it. And even if you've heard it preached on several times, as I did growing up in a Christian church, there's always a little different take on it, depending on who the preacher is and maybe what they're trying to get people to do or not do in their congregation. So anyway, I thought it would be fun, interesting, to take a little time with this story and just look at it more closely and the people involved and what all was going on. It may be helpful to think about the fact that Mary and Martha were real people. I mean, they weren't just someone that was put into a parable as an illustration or something. They actually lived. Master said in the AY, you may remember, that when he went back to India to see his guru in 1935, he went through Europe, and then he also stopped in the Holy Land, and he visited the tomb of Lazarus, and he says, I went to the home of Martha and Mary. So that's pretty good proof for me that they're real, and that place that is honored as their home is actually their home. It's also just a little aside that came to my mind when I was looking at this, is that Jesus respected women. You know, in his time, women's status was pretty different than it is today in our country, at least. And back there, they were generally considered to be inferior to men and didn't have very many at all of the rights and privileges that men did. But Jesus, you can see throughout the Gospels, honored and valued women as his disciples. So whatever he said about their roles or what they were doing in this story, it was in that context. It wasn't that he would have valued what their roles in society were differently from each other. There's another interesting thing when we look at this a little more closely and compare it to other scriptures, in the Gospels in particular. John writes in his Gospel that Jesus loved Martha, her sister, and Lazarus. He loved them. Now, that doesn't sound remarkable on its face, because we would all say, well, Jesus loved everybody. However, in the scriptures, there's only one other person in all the scriptures, one other specific person that the scriptures say Jesus loved, which was John, the brother of James, who actually wrote the Gospel. And so that's interesting to me, that would be put forth there. And in fact, it's written by the other disciple that it said that he loved, John. And so there must have been a special relationship here with them. The Gospels show that Jesus felt comfortable with them in their home. There are several places in the Bible where specifically it's talking about Jesus with this with these three siblings, and some other places that it's likely that he's talking about, but not completely clear that he's with them. But he felt comfortable with them, at ease, and they seemed to be close friends, more than just acquaintances. Their home in Bethany was just an easy walk to Jerusalem, to the old Jerusalem, by going around the Mount of Olives. So he was in that proximity a lot, and it's very likely that their home was considered his home away from home when he was in that area. Lazarus died, and Jesus came to resurrect him from the dead, and you may be aware that he put off going right away to prevent him from dying or from resurrecting him. And the implication is that he was using Lazarus' death and resurrection to announce himself to more people. and who he really was, what he could do. So he finally did go back after Lazarus had been in the tomb, I think, 3 days. And he saw Mary and Martha there. And, of course, he knew he was going to raise him. He knew everything was going to be okay. Lazarus was going to be up and at him again, and everything was going to be fine. But they didn't know that. Maybe they should have. Maybe not. Would we have? You can ask yourself that question. Your guru's coming. Your brother is dead. What's going to happen? At any rate, whatever they should have felt, they were in anguish. They were heartbroken, and they were sobbing. And Jesus saw this, and he also wept. In fact, as a Sunday school kid, I knew well that that occasion created the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. So if I got stuck in reciting a Bible verse sometime, I could always pull that one out. But the occasion in which he wept, again, I think shows, you know, this was just out of compassion for them that he wept, because he loved them. He was very close to them. One esoteric tradition holds that one year when Jesus was young, Joseph, his father, and their whole family were coming back from Passover, headed towards Nazareth, and they stopped in Bethany, their town, their little village, and made a connection with Simon, who had three children, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. And at least went in and supped with them, and perhaps stayed the night with them. And that then through their whole lives, these two families were close, and that they would stop often when coming back from Passover to be with them. So that may or may not be true, but that's one of the traditions. And in that tradition that Jesus, in his ministry, stayed there many times, it was kind of a respite for him to get away from the hustle and bustle and sometimes to escape the authorities. They certainly spoke to each other almost like they were a part of the immediate family. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we look at Martha's words. So Jesus seemed to feel a deep affinity for all three, but of course their personalities and their perspectives differed. Martha's outlook on life was no doubt quite different from Mary's. It's likely that Martha was older than Mary and perhaps the eldest in the family. She was clearly in charge and may have even, if at least possible, owned the house. But if not, she was in charge of the affairs there and had a lot of responsibilities that the presumed younger Mary didn't have to deal with. She was definitely the leader, the more outgoing. The Bible clearly states that when Jesus came on this particular occasion, Martha went out and welcomed him and received him into their home. And the story as read this morning could produce the feeling somehow that Martha was of lesser spiritual stature than Mary. But we don't really want to indict Mary for just wanting to serve her Lord well. And there's a section in the scriptures where she's proclaiming him as Lord and Savior and bowing at his feet. So don't think in general there was this big difference spiritually between the two. And right in this same section in a verse, maybe it was in the reading or before it, Luke carefully explains that Martha had a sister called Mary who also sat at the feet of Jesus. And that one little word gets skipped over a lot. So Martha also, no question about it, was a devotee of Jesus's. Well, we have Mary sitting at his feet. We have Martha being busy around. Let's look a little more at Mary's actions, or maybe it's lack of actions, internal actions going on. They there's a couple stories in the Bible about this. One is very clearly Mary. She may have just done this on another occasion too. But she washed Jesus' feet with her hair, dried them with her hair actually, and put on his feet a very precious ointment called spikenard. Unless we think that, you know, she just went into her bedroom and grabbed the nicest bottle of perfume off her oil, off of her dresser or whatever they had in those days, and brought it in and used that. Spikenard was very, very expensive. It was estimated that a pound or a pint, as it's translated sometimes, of this spikenard was equal to a man's annual wages in those days. So it's possible that her life savings went into this, that some share of inheritance, we don't know. But it was a great sacrifice. And interestingly, the oil was usually imported from India, sometimes Nepal or China, but it was made from flowers that only grew in the Himalayas, which might have more interest for us than some congregations. But the use of it outside of this famous event is significant too, because it was used at a special incense altar in the temple during the Second Jerusalem Temple period to represent devotion and sacrifice. So this was what she used to put on Jesus' feet. Very dedicated to him, you know, showing that no personal sacrifice, you know, nothing was too great for him to surrender, for her to surrender or give over for Jesus' sake. And of course, we can see that Jesus very highly regarded Mary's approach. Well, we can ask ourselves, you know, who was actually the more hospitable or the more serviceful of the two? Who was more concerned about her active relationship with Jesus? Mary bustling about, getting the food ready, not just for Jesus, there was his whole entourage was there. I mean, she was busy. She probably even had a crew in there, but still wish she had had Mary's help. But her putting that first brought to mind when Sri Yukteswar first saw Babaji and immediately, like, oh, I got to go get food for him. You know, all right, or let me give him some special treat. Let me show the way that I feel about him, the way I revere him, by doing some activity to show him. So, lest we think that this is, you know, very different than our own things closer to our path, this was true even for Sri Yukteswar. He had this this thing that came first to his mind. For Martha to suggest that Jesus might not care that Mary wasn't helping him, you know, shows that close relationship and the forthrightness that she felt she could have with Jesus. Martha did not just suggest to Jesus, well, maybe you could say something to Mary and have her come and help me. No, she told him directly, tell her to help me. And in a way, Martha actually put the onus of getting this all together and serving this whole entourage on Jesus, because she's saying, you need to help Mary see what she's supposed to do and come so I can fulfill my duties. But Martha's error is one that devotees, all of us, have some danger, perhaps, of falling into. No doubt she was doing work that could be spiritually uplifting. But Jesus basically said, you know, if you allow your mind to become wholly engrossed in the activity that you're doing, and you're not keeping me or you're not keeping God in your mind while you're doing the activity, then although you might get some good karma from it, it's not fully spiritual. And this is what honors and transforms your activity, your work, into a spiritual endeavor. He uses the phrase, that good part, in the reading today. It's also more recently translated that better part. That better part, implying that we've got a choice here, that what Martha did was not bad, but there was a better thing that she could have done. Both a spirit-filled life based on prayer and meditation and contemplation, and a life that's filled with busyness and work, of course, can be dedicated to God and can take us on our road, we're on our path, where we're trying to go. And Jesus then followed what he said about the good part by saying that the good part, this better part, the one you want to choose, Martha, lasts forever. It shall not be taken from her, is the way it says in the scripture. But means it will last forever. These bodies, even if we're helping somebody else's body, these things are not going to last forever. They're going to be come just spirit when the body goes away. But the things that we do with the consciousness of the divine stay in that spiritual body, and we take that with us after we die. So if you just want to kind of play the odds, it seems much smarter to do all your work, everything you do, with God consciousness. You may get some good karma for, you'll get good karma for it, and you may have some short-term results, but the long-term results after, throughout this lifetime, after this lifetime, and into the future are guaranteed if we do it with the right consciousness. But Jesus was saying, deepen your attunement with my spirit. For living with God means being aware of that spirit. So Martha's mind was filled with the thoughts of all those dishes steaming on the stove, of slicing and dicing and sifting and spicing and trying to produce a feast that was fit for her guest and those who came with him. And that reminds me very much of a episode in my own life. A few of us, I'd been at Ananda, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, and a small group of us were invited by Swamiji to Swami Kriyananda to go to Kauai with him for a week or 10 days. And we decided, as we were kind of planning out as much as you ever did that with Swami, what was going to happen in the coming days, that one night he and some of the people in another staying in another facility would come and join with those of us staying. Arjuna and Shivani were there and some others. Uma was staying with Swamiji, for those of you that know these people. And so that night they were going to come over to our place and eat. And somehow it turned out, I'm not really sure I volunteered, although it probably fits the story better to say that I wanted to make the dinner so I could impress Swami. But at any rate, I was in charge of the dinner and decided not to go with the other folks over to the beach, but stay and make sure this dinner was good. So went out and shopped and wanted to make a really good salad for Swami because he would like that. And in Hawaii, it's not easy just to go anywhere and buy a variety of greens and all to be able to have the makings for a good salad. So I had to go 2 or 3 places and kind of fussing about that and worrying about the time. And I knew, because we were just going to have pasta, I think someone else made that decision, but we're just going to have the pasta. I needed to make at least 2 sauces so there'd be a variety, you know, so a pesto sauce and a red sauce. Made sure we got those ingredients. But I felt I really needed something to, unfortunately, impress Swami with so he would really notice, because I wanted to hear how much he liked this meal. So I decided to do baked, slightly green papayas. I thought, this will be a hit. And so we made sure we had honey to put on them and some of the sweet spices that they didn't have there. We had to go out and buy them. So rushed back and just tried to get everybody involved in that meal as soon as they came back so it would be perfect. And the meal came off very well. That part of it went well. We were all sitting there, about eight of us, said the blessing, and we started eating. And Swami was at the far end of the table, and I was at this end of the table. There were three, or maybe there were four people on each side. So we ate the salad, and I thought, it's unusual. Does Swami know it's unusual to have such good greens and everything? I'm not sure, but I think, you know, he's going to like the salad. So he's eating and just talking to people on both sides of the table like he would normally do about whatever came into his mind or someone else brought up, and he eats his salad. Priest decided, I said, okay, the pasta. I'm unlikely to get a lot of praise for the pasta, but let's get the pasta. I've got good sauces, at least I know. Went through the pasta course, ate that. There were some other vegetables and all, and I thought, okay. Everybody seems to be having a good time. A couple other people mentioned something positive about the food. And then I went and got the papaya out of the oven where it was staying just slightly warm and brought it out and served it all around. And a couple of people, oh, papaya, I've never had it this way. And a little bit of chitter-chatter like that. Swami's just continuing his conversation. The other people, you know, like it was, I don't know, custard or something, you know, that I just sat in front of him, purchased, already made at the store. Just being polite and eating it. And then we sat around and chatted some, and Swami and the people with him went off. I was sitting going, man. I had to really watch my consciousness because I knew it wasn't in Swami not to be appreciative or at least gracious. But he didn't say a word about the food, not one word. Well, the next day, or it might have been the day after, we got a call about 11 o'clock. And it was, Swami wants to go out shopping, as he often did. And he wants some lunch. He wants to pick you up so we can all go together, have lunch ready at 11:30. We're going, we don't have time to go get anything to shop. So it was obvious that this would be a disaster. And so I just threw all thoughts, all concern, anything in that deep compartment of my mind out. And we just started going through the cupboards to see what was there. We had those Loma, whatever those hot dogs are we used to get, those vegetarian hot dogs. Yeah. In cans. We had gotten some buns for them. We had some salad left over from the night before. And I think that was about it. Salad and hot dogs. There might have been some cheese or pickles or something on the side. So Swami and his little group, and we all sit down. We're all sitting down together. Swami picks up the hot dog. And we had a great time doing it, you know. I was just joy-filled and having fun. And we just threw this stuff together because, you know, what could you do? You have 30 minutes for this. And so Swami picks up the hot dog and takes the first bite and goes, this is delicious. Has some salad. And what a nice salad. Same one that we had yesterday, right, except a day old. What a nice salad. And on it went through the meal. He couldn't say enough to praise that meal. Well, I don't have to be too detailed in the explanation about the application of it. I just had a bad attitude. I mean, it wasn't bad in that it was negative or angry or even upset. But my mind was not in the right place. I was thinking much more about getting certain types of food in front of him than I was probably even just being completely serviceful to him. And certainly I was not thinking about God as much I was, which way we cut the, you know, the carrots for the salad or whatever it was. But the next day, he could just tell. I mean, he wasn't there on either of those occasions to be able to see what was happening. But he could tell probably just in general by tuning in. But also I think he could tell by the vibrations in the food. What he was consuming. So Martha did have that problem. She had her troubled, anxious, worried vibrations going into the food. And so as wonderful as her efforts to serve were, they fell far short. So this is a challenge for all of us, you know, in whatever we do, to keep our consciousness connected to the divine with whatever activity we're undertaking. And even in the short run, like with me and Swami and him loving the meal, and certainly in the long run, as we work on developing ourselves spiritually on the path, that is the key. Keep that connection ever present in your mind.